Hello, and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek, Enterprise. I'm Maddie, space Lubchansky.
I'm Clayton, space Ashley.
That's right. This week on the show, it is episode 13 of season 1, Dear Doctor, and the week of January 23rd, 2002.
It's a slightly less malign episode this week.
Yeah, I will say, we were talking about it before we started recording, a only mildly maligned episode of television that I thought was just fine. It was actually,
sitting there watching a piece of television that I could engage with, and there was acting and writing that was not the floor we've been sitting at for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was only missing one thing, and that's, of course, Shran.
Of course. But you can't win them all.
Yeah.
You can't Shran every time.
You can't Shran them all, folks. Some days you're the Shran fan, and some days...
The Shran eats you?
The Shran eats you. That's right. That's the old saying that they have on my planet of Earth. Okay. Anyways, what is happening? I am the what do we call it? The science officer for the episode.
Right.
Which means I'm going to take you on a tour of the cultural and current events milieu of the time. The week of January 23rd, 2002. So we skipped over a bunch of December and January because of the hiatus that the show. Not our show, of course, which would never take a hiatus, took.
The TV show took.
Our show has never taken a hiatus and never will, and never will again. So we didn't cover, we left it for this time because there was a lot of culture to talk about last time.
Mm-hmm.
But this time I've got some news because a couple of big things happened.
Really?
A couple of like real choice post 9/11 madness events occurred.
I have an unsettling feeling.
You're about to hear a couple of unsettling things. I would say a triad of unsettling things. One was the failed plot by the Jewish Defense League, which sounds fun and fine, but is in fact a right-wing terror group.
Mm-hmm.
In Culver City, California, they plotted to bomb a mosque and also the office of Republican Congressman Daryl Issa. I remember this, and they were one of those classic right-wing orgs that just, like, they have all the chat logs with an obvious FBI agent, and they're like, hello, Mr. Not an FBI agent, I would love to buy 12 bombs. And the FBI agent is like, sure, I'll meet you at your house with the bombs if you have
a
big...
By the way, what do you plan to use the bombs for? To assassinate a congressman and blow up a mosque. Thanks for asking.
I mean, just really depressing stuff all around. The main fella here ended up with the guy. He ended up in jail after a plea deal for your sentence for 20 years in 2005. But he was murdered in jail very quickly by a guy who struck him in the head with a concrete block.
Wow.
So all's well that ends well for those guys.
For right-wing terrorists, not a problem anymore.
No, goodbye. Listen, remember when the FBI would do stuff like that? Not really. So another big thing that happened was on January 5th, 2002, a teenager named Charles J. Bishop in Tampa, Florida, was learning how to fly like a Cessna plane. And while his teacher was out of the plane, like the flight instructor left him at the plane to go perform like pre-flight inspections around the plane, like on these Cessnas you gotta like walk around observe.
A flight simulator.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, the flight instructor left him at the plane to perform the pre-flight inspection, and this 15-year-old Charles Bishop started the engine and took off. And they alerted the Coast Guard and the local Air Force base, and helicopters were following the Cessna, and he slammed the plane into the Bank of America building in Tampa.
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah, this shocking event that
wow.
He left a suicide note that like said, "Thank you, Osama bin Laden. This is for, you know, like to strike against the great saint in America."
Uh-huh.
He had asked for help from Al-Qaeda, he claimed, and they had turned him down. And this this event had a casualty or a fatality of one person, which was just him. It barely even damaged the building.
I would say I'm looking at photos of it, and it's like, I mean, tragic situation all around. But
I think,
like,
if someone was at the window and they were not facing the plane and did not see it coming, they might have died, but that's...
Because they don't move that fast, a Cessna. I mean, that's why helicopters could keep up with it.
Yeah, Cessna don't fly too fast.
Pretty
these
small,
guys,
light.
Yeah,
it
very small, very light.
Just took out one window in this very large building. Kind of ineffectual.
These big buildings are built pretty tonka tough, I'd say. You know, and it's one of those things where it's like, oh, after he died, they found that he was using a medicine called isotretinoin, that is... an acne medication that is often known to induce depression. So we're like, maybe it was the acne medication drove him insane. But I maintain and think it was sort of post 9/11 madness in America.
Copycat.
I mean, he's 15.
Fine.
It's like he literally did. He tried to do a copycat 9/11. And I remember this happening, but I think it is not over discussed or not discussed a lot in terms of like what was going on in those heady days.
That kind of thing would just like disappear, recede into the past, because it was just like an ineffectual terrorist attack, I guess, if you call it a terrorist attack.
Yeah, like, you know, I think it's almost more, it's like more remembered the time that the guy in the Yankees crashed his plane into Manhattan and died, which was not a terrorist attack, it was an accident. But like, I feel like when we're thinking about like plane crashes that freaked everybody out, that's more top of mind. And then that one American Airlines flight that crashed in
the actual
right
disaster.
In like November in 2001, which I think we talked about. The other huge thing before I move on to culture is the shoe bombing attempt happened in December of 2001, which for those not familiar is a British national who had joined Al-Qaeda. Did try to bomb a plane with his shoes. He filled them up with plastic explosives. Everybody in the plane kind of beat the shit out of him immediately.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyways,
I don't know if I'm confusing this. Wasn't there also like the underwear bomber who like burned himself when he tried to light his underwear?
That was another
bomb?
One. Yeah, I think that was a different time. I think.
Okay, maybe we'll catch up to that one.
Maybe,
but this one is
we'll catch up to the underwear bomber. No, that was 2009. That was 2009.
Wow. Okay, we're not gonna get there.
So we're not gonna, unless they rebooted Enterprise and nobody told us.
but this was the one that the long tail of it was that we all had to start taking our shoes off.
Yeah, I was wondering, I take your shoes off is because this one dude, Richard Reed was his name, I believe. Yes,
you can change history. You know, one person.
Yeah, he's still in jail. This guy, he's in jail forever, it seems like. Anyways, they very much mistreated him in jail, however, and he had to go on a hunger strike to get some basic needs met, which is a great country, good stuff. We love it. So that was depressing. I want to move on.
Is there anything we could bring ourselves joy in the movie complex, perhaps on the radio?
Yeah, so I think come with me as we... clamber into our pickup trucks and put on the radio with our friend Lawrence Kansas and take a ride in his beautiful car listening to whatever the most popular station in Kansas is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I've never been. But because I'm an effeminate, rootless cosmopolitan. Anyways, so what was I saying? Oh, let's talk about music. So we are much like we are fully in like the 9/11 madness of the news. Mm-hmm. I would say, Clayton, we did it. We made it. We are in the early 2000s now. We've done it.
We've shed the 90s.
We've fully shed the
emerged
90s like a snake skin.
Cocoon.
Yeah. And we have fully entered guns blazing in multiple ways into the early 2000s. In the top 11, we have Linkin Park's How You Remind Me at number 11. Wherever You Will Go by The Calling at number 9. My Sacrifice by Creed at number 5. And How You Remind Me by Nickelback at number 2. It is like fully that time. Like when you think of 2002 music, you are in Lawrence's truck in 2002 January. We're here. We did it. We made it.
It's the new metal revolution, right? Is that
the new metal is here, my friend. Linkin Park knocking on the door of the top 10 is a truly...
That was the thing I wasn't expecting, honestly. But yeah, already.
They're here. And just, you know, furthers my sort of like the thesis I'm rounding on, which is that like this all was all going to happen anyways. This was music that was already in production. American culture was already curdling. Something bad was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was not just that one beautiful blue Tuesday morning that we don't discuss and won't acknowledge. At the top of the chart is still Usher with You Got It Bad. Fine song. Mary J. Blige's Family Affair is still hooked on America's cerebellum. It cannot be killed. Shakira's Wherever Whenever is hanging out. And Alicia Keys' This Woman's Worth are all in the top 10 as well. It's incredible that something decent is coming down the pipe, which is Outkast's The Whole World is hanging out at number 25 and creeping up, which is a good song that I like.
Yeah, that's nice.
As is Mystical. Yeah, Mystical's Bouncing Back at number 40, which is a song that kicks ass and I love extremely. And Mystical, I'm just looking this up now, never did anything wrong at all. Great. which is just, if you were wondering about Mystical and why we don't hear about him anymore, is that because he never did anything wrong and he went to live on a big farm upstate with all the other rappers. And I would say, to round out our music talk, after a dominant run, I think it is safe to say that at number 31, Alicia Keys has fallen, has...
Truly fallen.
Truly fallen.
Sorry, out of favor.
It's you know what?
We're setting that up.
It was, you know, my really original joke that everyone was going to love, and you killed it. You stepped on it. You killed it.
Completely. We can do that again if you want to.
No, I don't want to take it again. I think you got to live with it. You got to live with what you've done to me.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. What's your feeling about nu metal? What's your nu metal experience?
That it definitely feels extremely 2000s for me, because it was what my homeroom teacher all throughout middle school had on the radio for the 20 minutes I was there every morning. That's and good. Things like How You Remind Me, and there was another one that was always up there. It's like half, it's one of the ones that's like half rap.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say, I guess, to amend my previous statements about nu metal.
Yeah.
Is that like nu metal was around already. Korn had been around since the early 90s.
Of course.
But there's like a specific early 2000s sort of rock and straight up rock and roll alternative that is like so heinous that is really, really your, you know, your callings, your creeds, your life's houses, etc. Your nickels back, your fives for fighting, that sort of stuff is really, that specter is haunting the radio in a serious
Nickelback
way.
Was definitely there too. That was one of them.
Yeah,
and
it
was only, you know, once I like got out of my shell in Kansas and was in New York City that I met people that listened to some of these bands and didn't turn out to be awful people that surprised me. The world is a beautiful place full of infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Yeah. Like a Vulcan would say.
Yeah.
So we know we're listening to the radio in Lawrence's car. Where are we heading? We're going to the movies.
Yay.
Kind of a boring movie week, I gotta say.
Boo.
Black Hawk Down is hanging around and is at number one. Kind of like a very slow word of mouth hit. It was in theaters for like a year.
Okay.
It's crazy because it was a movie with a huge budget.
Yeah.
And its opening week was like 100 or 200 grand. It was like nothing.
Uh-huh.
And then it just hung around forever and made back its budget eventually.
What does it say? What was the opening week?
It was a couple weeks ago, like 4 weeks ago.
Okay. So it was in this period.
Yes. And we talked about Black Hawk Down last week, but now it's at number one because the only new movie this week is at number two. And that's, of course, Snow Dogs.
Snow Dogs.
A movie I cannot believe did not come out at Christmas.
I mean, there's still snow in January.
Yeah, but like...
at the time.
Yeah, it's the Cuba Gooding Jr. movie, right? Snow Dogs?
I was trying to remember who that actor was, but I just remember
sure
the fact...
it's Cuba.
...as a kid.
Yeah.
That the commercial had the dogs talking in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the movie...
The dogs do not talk.
The dogs talk, I think, in one dream sequence.
It's a dream sequence, that's right.
But it is literally like a two-minute scene in the entire movie. And so I really felt ripped off, frankly.
Yeah, they pulled the kangaroo jack on you.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
the old
that's
kangaroo
really,
jack.
The old kangaroo jack switcheroozy. My only lasting cultural memory of the film Snow Dogs is a throwaway 30 Rock gag where Tracy Jordan says that he's in the fifth Snow Dog movie, which is stylized as Five Now Dog Five. Anyways, that's my only... I never saw the film Snow Dogs. I was too old for it.
I don't even remember much other... I mean, it's a movie about a Iditarod or something similar. And
yeah,
it's they go through tribulations and trials like a Disney sports movie would.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of the plot of it other than being annoyed there wasn't more talking dogs.
Yeah, a movie that made worldwide $115 million.
Holy crap. Okay.
And that was all... Yeah, I... Kind of unbelievable. A movie that, like... just hangs around for a long time making $4 to $6 million every week. Crazy. Oh, he's a dentist from Miami, and that's why it's a fish out of water kind of story.
Wow.
Yeah, because Miami's warm and snow is cold.
And I don't think dentists are supposed to know that much about sledding dogs.
No, dentists are often, their world is shrunk down very small to the inside of a human mouth, and the world outside while you're on a dog sled is quite large. The sky, the mountains,
it's big. It's much bigger.
So it's a classic small hot to big cold fish
dentists,
out of water
snow dog
tail. Yeah, that's like one of the things I learned about. You know, it's like man versus society, man versus nature, man versus himself, man who used to mouth has to do dog. Not anything else new this week, really. Nothing wide release. I think a lot of movies got moved to like the next summer from this winter or to the next winter.
Because they saw that like people were afraid to go to
people were not going to the movies anymore. And I think they just were like, well, nothing that has any sort of like action where, you know, there's a lot of like big movies that have like, number one, January used to be like dumping ground for the worst movies of all time, which it still kind of is because like you're not really in award season anymore. And I think also, yeah, people like didn't want to put any action movies out because if they have anything with terrorists in it, which was like all 90s movies, people were spooked.
And I guess spooked. Lord of the Rings, I mean, it was such a, you know, completely divorced from anything going on kind of action fantasy. But also that I was remembering this afterwards when we talked about last week, that's on a like one movie per year schedule, right? We're gonna okay, so they had to kind of stay to that probably.
They had taken the like the biggest gamble of all time. Lord of the Rings is down to number 4 this week, but it's been out for 6 weeks.
No one wants to go up against that either probably at this point.
Yeah, that also might be it. The film, we didn't talk about this last week, the film Orange County hanging out. A movie loved at the time because I'm a moron. Also hanging out still is The Royal Tenenbaums, Ocean's 11, our good friends Vanilla Sky, and the movie about the British children who later we find out canonically shit wherever they want and it has magically disappeared. That's still around. And yeah, after a long night at the movies, why not pile back in the truck, head to our... the parking lot that we park the truck in every night to watch television on.
Get good signal here.
We're outside the Radio Shack. There's a lot of antennas around, so the vibrations are high. Enterprise's old nemesis, Dawson's Creek, 60 Minutes.
Oh, okay. What do you think is the nemesis?
And My Wife and Kids, according to Jim Power Hour, are still totally kicking its ass.
Our old foe.
Our old Jim. I remember you, my old friend, now enemy. It's all still getting its ass kicked by the things that it is used to getting its ass kicked by. However, a new challenger has appeared this week.
Oh.
With the pilot. It's another thing eating its lunch is the pilot of That 80s Show.
Wait a minute.
Which is a really grim thing to imagine.
Because I was like, now the big one was That 70s Show. That one worked. Mm,
yes.
It lasted for a while.
That 70s Show was on for a long time. Yeah, 80s lasted like a half a season or something.
I was going to say, that one, did they try 90s as well?
I think That 80s Show is...
Killed the idea.
I actually don't know. Are they doing a That 90s Show? I remember like thinking they're going to do it. It happened already.
I think like blinking of an eye probably. I don't even...
It goes on... It was canceled already. It already came and went.
2023.
And it had Red and Kitty.
Three seasons?
Whatever. Crucially, That 80s Show had Glenn Howerton on it.
Oh.
Which is an insane thing to consider.
They fucked that up.
They fucked it up big time.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, a bad show that didn't last very long, but kicked the absolute shit out of Enterprise.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For obvious reasons, because nobody liked this show because it was bad to watch. But yeah, so that's the, but that was the landscape, man. Like things that were, they were, America was just out of ideas for TV. We're watching Your Choices Were, according to Jim, that 80s show or a Star Trek Enterprise. But if I was to watch Star Trek Enterprise here in Lawrence's truck, Clayton, what would I see?
Let's go there now because it's actually, it's, let's go.
Let's go. Great segue.
So this is the one of the few weeks that we could genuinely say turning the channel to Enterprise was probably your best bet.
Yeah, I think so.
Even up against what the show's usually up against.
Yeah.
You probably have some better television elsewhere, but not this week. Not this week. And the reason is, I mean, basically entirely. Folks, we got Phlox.
We got Phlox, baby. He's here.
We have so much. Right off the bat, we have something that I was thinking, like, why have they not returned to this? It was one of the best parts of Phlox in the beginning episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is that his whole deal is he likes to use kind of natural medicine, but he likes to use alien animals, critters. To do treatments.
He's got a freaking zoo in there.
So he's got a menagerie in his doctor's office. And this first like cold open is just like a fun practical effects thing where yeah. each little terrarium like has something in it. And it's just like a fun little, it like skitters around or a little tentacle comes out and he's feeding it. And then it ends on a little joke where he feeds one to something in a little screaming cage. And then he takes a bite himself. Perfect. Incredible. No notes.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And it was just immediately hyped for this. It was just that it made me like, I'm actually going to enjoy sitting here and watching this piece of television. That doesn't usually happen. And we kind of get the main plot pretty quick. And also it ends up being the structure of this episode. Is this pistolary? Or does it need to be two people lettering back and forth?
I think it, whatever. It.
Is
I
that
say,
written word? Maybe I'm just trying to act fancy.
I say it's epistolary when it's a person just writing a letter.
So he's got a pen pal because Hoshi walks into his doctor's room. There's a name for that. Medical wing?
The medical bay.
And she's like, you're so popular. You get all the mail. And this time it's a human pen pal in the Intergalactic Doctors Exchange Program. Dr. Lucas. You don't hear it. The rest of the show, he's doing a narrating thing where he's just like, doctor, dear doctor. He's every once in a while breaking with this narration of what he's writing to his pen pal. And it's a good structure. Honestly, it works. It gives you a lot of interesting thoughts directly from Phlox's head.
I think he might actually show up at one point.
In the show later?
He does. That's right. And he's played by a cool guy who I like. It's Richard Reel.
Oh, ooh. Hell yes.
How long do we have to wait for that? I think he shows up, let's see, in an episode called Cold Station 12, which, let's see, season 4, episode 5. Well, so we'll see you later, Richard.
If there's still an internet to put this up on
We'll get there.
He starts off just kind of like setting the stage here. He's going to be sending these notes back and forth. But part of what you're going to see here is sort of like, what is Phlox's relationship with the crew? And so his first kind of like being a doctor moment in this episode is with Archer. Yeah. But not for Archer. Important canon established here. Porthos is getting cheese and he shouldn't be. It's not good for him. It's not good for his digestion. And so Archer is told, reprimanded, you can't keep getting cheese to your dog, dude.
Yeah.
But we hear Phlox, you know, hear his narration, the letter he's writing. He's talking about how he's fascinated by how humans are able to so easily fashion these relationships with, as he calls them, lesser beings.
Yeah.
I enjoy this idea of an alien observing humans and being like, that's weird. Why do y'all do that? This is good stuff. I mean, there's more of this and there's more stuff later that's more problematic, but it's like it's a good window into something I think we want from this show, which is like aliens are supposed to be very different. Give us some of that, like how they interact when that happens,
please. It is strange in this episode because I feel like later Phlox becomes sort of characterized as like, or like the Denobulans get characterized as like freaky deaky party dudes. And in this episode, he's kind of a prude.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if they just kind of drop some of that stuff, but I was noting, like, I don't...
Well, they don't drop it because, like, in the episode, he's, like, writing a letter to his friend Jeremy, by the way, is his fucking name. The episode keeps getting... I'm, like, trying to watch it there in space, and I keep getting interrupted by a guy being like, "Dear Jeremy." But he tells the doctor, who is, you know, on Denobula, he says, like, "Oh yeah, mating season is rough. You have fun like separating the combatants." And it's like, yeah, it sounds like a crazy planet
with multiple partners, but no physical contact.
Don't touch me. The only people who can touch me are my seven wives,
seven husbands. So the other thing here, though, I like is they establish something that actually becomes a long running thing in this series. Which is that Enterprise has movie night.
Yeah, I like movie night.
I like movie night. They're watching real movies.
This feels like every Star Trek series has like a weird little thing that everybody in the crew is obsessed with. Like on Next Generation, they're all like into like using the holodeck to do like old timey stuff together, like pretend they're on a sailboat.
Yeah.
And in Voyager, they all go to a pool hall. In Deep Space Nine, they hang out at a dive bar. It's like, it's nice that they have movie night. I like it. It's good.
I like it. And we get such a weird thing from Phlox where he says, "Oh, we used to have these movie things, but they went out of fashion because we all realized our own lives were more interesting." What?
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. I mean, it's one thing to be like, yeah, we got rid of movies, and that's like, maybe you can be interesting about that, because who knows what culture will look like in 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
"We stopped watching movies because our lives were too interesting." Cannot possibly be true when you live in a post-scarcity society.
That's the thing. That sounds like something really bad happened. Like,
yeah, we stopped watching movies because we're all busy running.
we all got really into running.
We all got really into fleeing. Yeah. We got into fleeing, running, hiding, these things. The movies attract them, you know?
Who would be into movies in a world like that? Anyway. But also, this is important scene to establish that he has this sort of assistant, Cutler, crewman Cutler. And after this sort of quasi, I guess he doesn't understand as a date at movie night, she touches him just kind of gingerly on the arm.
She's
and
the
he's
most
like,
awkward, sort of like grabby. He like turned around. She's like, "Ugh!" Like, it's very strange.
And then immediately when he doesn't react well to an incredibly awkward gesture, she's like, "Oh, I forgot. Denobulans aren't into physical touch." But he's like, "No, I'm trying to learn how to like adjust to my cultural differences." And she's like, "Oh, in that case, I'm going to smooch you on.
I'm going to give you a little smoocher." Which also, like, this also is very strange for Phlox, because like previously he's been so like happy-go-lucky, I'll try anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to have found his red line, which is getting smooched.
Yeah. But, you know, he's trying.
He's trying. God bless him.
And then we get the B plot. And I forgot this was the episode with this B plot, and it honestly made me more. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this being pretty good Star Trek shit.
Yeah.
In a generic 90s episode kind of way. They find a ship. It's got some weak biosigns on it. Hoshi does some magic button translating. Whatever. They can talk to these people, and they have an incurable disease on their planet. They sent this ship out here to find anyone who would help them. Interestingly, they note that they had met two warp-capable species, the Galnar and the Ferengi. Wait, did I get that right?
Something like that. They definitely say the Ferengi.
They definitely say the Ferengi. That's what I heard, ears perked up, especially when...
My ears actually became very large and they connected large. Across my forehead.
became very sensitive to touch.
That's right.
They and T'Pol is like, I don't know, which I'm also kind of surprised by. I don't know. I know... They do something with the Ferengi late in the series.
No, it's later this season,
season?
I believe so.
Oh, man, okay.
There's a good episode where it is, I believe, first contact with the Ferengi.
But, like, I love the way they do it.
Yeah, it's a very strange, funny way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, but we'll see.
Yes, no, it is. It's good. It's an episode that I remember. It's good.
So, I guess they're kind of setting that up here, but this is something that I feel like happens more often in Star Wars. But it's this like, it feels like it's that they're shrinking the universe, but this is just like, no one's ever heard of the Ferengi, or at least the Vulcans, who we assume are pretty advanced in this era. Never heard of them.
But there's a lot of people nobody has ever heard of. Like, at this, like in the pilot, like the Klingons are still pretty mysterious to the Vulcans. Like we're at the beginning of the age of space exploration, like in the universe generally, you know?
Yeah, I guess that is more apt to what they want this to feel like, more like the Wild West, I guess.
Yeah, like it is like people are
Lawrence Kansas's view.
People are fuck. I feel like this is sort of they're trying to say like, oh, like this is the beginning of everyone getting in contact with each other is like around this time, which mm-hmm. is fine to me. Like the Vulcans that they see in First Contact, the Vulcans you see on the show are not like that advanced. They're just like more advanced than humans are.
Fair enough.
There, I'm defending the episode.
You defend it? I mean, that's a very good point.
Her beautiful, just... her harsh critics,
I was like,
Clayton.
Come on, Vulcans. You don't know who the Ferengi are, but that's a very fair point. So they find these sick people and they decide, we're going to help out. This is another moment where we get another like letter that Phlox is sending. And he's like, I'm so surprised or impressed by how these humans, they just let their compassion take them wherever, immediately help these strangers they just met.
Yeah.
I noted here that we get this scene in the mess hall, and it's this like nice low frame shot that they don't usually use. I was just like, oh, they're trying something here to be just a little bit more cinematic. It's not the same boring shot they've done every time. And the scene itself is also kind of fun, where they're both, Hoshi and Phlox are talking in Denobulan, as you learn in a little bit, that so Hoshi can kind of like learn to actually speak the language as opposed to just pressing the buttons on a translator.
Right.
So serving dual duty to give us some nice characterization, but also it's about Phlox basically asking, what is a human mating like?
Yeah.
But this is also, you know, it's a fun thing where they're, you know, neither of them are perfectly she's not perfectly speaking the language, so she messes up every once in a while. But he's also asking about an awkward thing and, oh no, are we dating? Do I have a friend? Or all these, you know, it's a charming way to do the scene.
Yeah, it was nice. It was good.
So they get to the pandemic planet. It's the Volokians.
Yeah. Volokis is the name of the planet.
Volokis.
Volokis looks nice.
Yeah.
It looks like, it looks like SimCity 2000.
Yeah, I was going to say the glowing towers. And
I'm looking at the photo of Volokis right now. It's got an orb. It's got a square building with a vagina in the middle of it. It's got a lot going on. It'll probably be the show art that I send to you.
Because I like these establishing shots that they probably ask the SFX department to do. And it's like, we spent a week on that. You used it for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. They got some bridges.
It looks cool. It looks very much like Society of, you know, FX meme.
Yes. Every hell the transit is in tubes. I like that detail.
This is like Society is perfect, except for everyone is dying.
It's real bad, actually.
Every person's dying, actually?
And we learn in this like hospital scene where it's real bad and they don't know what to do about it. They have some palliative care, but no matter what they do, the disease just gets eventually like evolves and gets worse in their parlance. But they also just mention this thing about like, oh, that little guy there, he doesn't talk the same as us because he's mink and they're a different species. Yep. Wait, what? Excuse me?
the mink.
They're lower evolved, I think, is what he says.
Yeah, they're screenwriters, I think. They wrote Citizen Kane, didn't get any credit for it.
And this is an interesting wrinkle.
Yeah, they're also pretty wrinkly.
They're also wrinkly. and also, critically, they are resistant to the disease.
Yeah.
When
you first hear about it, and the guy's like, oh yeah, they're a different species than us. They're stupid, but they work very hard.
Yes,
immediately, basically. Every hair in my body was like, ugh.
I was like, oh, that's the quirk to this episode. I remember now.
Mm-hmm.
We get another letter back to his pen pal. He's enlisted Cutler to help out. Still having trouble figuring out human affection, though. But he decides to ask somebody who kind of was also a fish out of water on the Enterprise. And I gotta say, I love this scene.
Yeah, this is good.
T'Pol is in for dental work because he's also, Phlox is also the crew dentist.
Yeah, he's also the dentist and the vet.
And the vet. And the
normal.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. T'Pol is shocked she has dental decay because she has a trifluorinate compound on her teeth that prevents decay for 20 years or something. cool. I like that somebody had to come up with future dental jargon. But he's, you know, I think it's actually the best joke in the scene is that he does the thing where he's leading up to a big question that's like, so do you know anything about human mating outside of their species? Right as he jams the dental tool into her mouth and she does the like,
Yeah,
like,
dentists love to do this though.
They love to do this.
It's actually
they?
A very good joke. Dentists it's love to ask you a question and then stick their hand entirely into your mouth. Just don't let Phlox buy a sled dog team, whatever you do. Because now he's done the opposite of sledding, which is operating a dentist's drill.
Okay, so yeah, one win for Enterprise, good dentist joke. She says that humans are not as emotionally developed and therefore they're not good at interspecies relationships. That's her advice. And he does think on it, but we'll come back to that B or C plot, I guess. He goes to meet with Archer and it's bad news, his research into the pandemic. He can help with the symptoms, but the epidemic is not actually an infection. It's a genetic one.
Yeah.
The Volokians are, it's a really like deep genetic one.
Yeah. Genetically, they, I think the term is they suck. They're all going to die soon from sucking too bad.
In 1 to 2 centuries.
Yeah.
Because of how much they suck.
Because of how much their DNA stinks.
Just falling apart at the molecular level.
Yeah, you know how evolution works, which is when God decides one race DNA is so bad that it's just like, we're not doing this one anymore.
I'd rather not.
No thanks.
And Archer's like, but I really want a cure. Do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
He gets another letter. And they're basically, they go to visit them to do some data gathering on the mink. And
the
they're
mink?
Like living like hunter gatherers in a forest.
Yeah.
So, you know, your hair was standing up on edge for a very good reason. This is a very fucked up society. As much as Phlox tries to be like, but it's so peaceful. Isn't that nice? They've done this thing and they're peaceful about it.
Yeah. And they love each, everyone gets along great. And on other planets, there's often when there's multiple humanoids, they all, one kills the other one, which certainly, I mean, I would say as a person who is lightly obsessed with history and prehistory and specifics, you know, the research is always changing. And yes, did we kill the Neanderthals? Yes. But mostly we just interbred. But
I was going to say, it's like a...
That's research that came out much later. So like this is going off of what's contemporaneous.
We get a couple more factoids, I guess, in this scene with the mink. He is shocked that the humans think that they're being exploited when we learn that the Volokians don't let them have fertile land, so they can't grow their own food.
They keep them in compounds.
And they give them all the food they need. They give them all the medicine they need. They're taken care of. They said they're so nice to them. And the humans are like, they're being exploited. Phlox can't wrap his mind around it, though.
And they expect the mink to just sit there and accept what's given to them and say, teek, teek, with a smile.
Teek, teek.
Which is how you say thank you in mink.
But he also notices, hey, these mink are kind of smart. They can think for themselves. It's amazing.
One of them sorted the samples.
They sorted the samples all on his own, and he picked up some of our words.
Despite our translators being so racist, they can't translate the mink language.
You're right. Is it too lower evolved or something?
I think it's
like,
too,
that is weird.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it is like, they're doing, they're, they are sort of doing phrenology to these dudes.
They are.
A little bit.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that she has to keep roughly translating in this scene.
Yeah.
We also, though, I think we get back on the ship, or maybe it's here, I can't remember, but we move into the, because Cutler and Phlox are having this sort of debate about whether or not this is fair to judge how these other species live. Phlox is like, well, what do you think about, what kind of relationships have you had? Have you ever been married? And she's like, no, of course I've not.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I have 3 wives, and each of them have 2 husbands, not counting me. This is normal.
This is regular.
I do like how he puts that. This is normal.
It's called compersion, and I experience it greatly. It's the opposite of jealousy, Cutler.
Come
and
on.
All Denobians enjoy it.
We all... my wives and husbands have unionized. Please help.
Yeah.
I think it's actually pretty well put in his point of like, we are different, and I want you to be okay with that going into this.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah, I wasn't looking to get married. I just wanted a friend and I want to see where it goes. He's like, you know what? I thought this would get weirder, but frankly, this is a more healthy way to like leave this than I expected.
Yeah, I think so. And then you, of course, see her in every episode for the rest of the show. Yeah. Just checking here. She's seen two times ever again for about 5 minutes total. Okay, well,
anyway.
Great use of her. And that's a series wrap on Ensign Cutler. Goodbye,
good
Cutler.
Job.
Yeah, great job. Let's give her...
Fourth wife? No.
Nope. No.
So we move... That C-plot is done. We get...
She's trundled off screen in a handcart. Get her out of here.
We're not ready to talk any more about poly relationships. That's enough. It's 2002. Are you serious?
Lawrence Kansas is having a seizure in his truck.
So Archer... He meets with that first sick alien they found to kind of deliver Phlox's, or to prepare him for the idea that, like, we're doing all we can, but, you know, this is harder than we thought. Mm. And he's like, you know, dude, if you give us your warp drive, we could totally find someone who could cure it a lot faster.
Yeah.
Which, fair point. And then you kind of see where this is going. The news is out.
Yeah.
He goes back up to Enterprise, and T'Pol's like, we've gotten hailed by all these other clinics all over the planet. Two ships have come to us. We had to turn them away because they thought we already had a cure.
Yeah.
So Archer's getting overwhelmed, and he calls T'Pol aside to go talk. And they're like, even if I wanted to give them warp, they wouldn't know how to build it. They're not technically advanced enough. They're nowhere near ready to like handle antimatter.
No.
She points out that, like, you know, you weren't either, and we stayed around Earth for 90 years. And this is the good stuff. He's like, I'm starting to understand how you felt when you decided you had to stay and help us.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a good point. This is the good stuff. This is what you should do with a prequel, is kind of like analyze what it means to figure out this shit for the first time. Something we've noted that they would like come up against in other episodes and then just be like, but let's not, we don't want to talk about it. It's too hard.
Right. Like, this is, I will say, we were saying this before. I was like, this feels almost like a middling DS9 episode, because they ask a big question and then grapple with it for a couple of minutes, and it's thrilling.
Yeah,
to see
it's
them
a hard
it.
Answer. It's hard to go with the answer. It's like,
yeah,
I'm not sure what we're going to do. Phlox, he's sad about DNA in the montage.
Yeah.
He finds Archer like in a t-shirt drinking alone in the mess hall.
Yeah.
You know, they're wrestling with this moral quandary. And Phlox brings up his point, which is, I'm not sure if this is just meddling with, you know, a society. We are deciding the future of either the Mink or the Volokians, because if we help the Volokians, if we just cure their genetic disease, the Mink will stay this like client species for the foreseeable future. If the Volokians were to die out, as nature seems to want, or God or whatever, the Mink, as he's noted, are on the verge of a evolutionary leap. They're not just seemingly getting smarter. Their DNA is changing for the better, I guess.
Yeah.
They're picking up more stats, and soon they could be an advanced race, I guess, highly evolved. But he makes the point, I'm a scientist, and I'm not just a doctor. I have to look at this of like from the scientific perspective. And kind of like you were alluding to with the Neanderthal example, he's like, used to be Neanderthals on Earth. What if some Vulcans had come along and helped out the Neanderthals? Would you still be around?
Right. Help them have sex with me, because that's what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The big, big, tall, and handsome.
That's right.
They, Archer, he says directly, your compassion is clouding your judgment.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're laying it all out here of like kind of a typical Star Trek quandary of what are the limits of what you can do? How much can you get yourself involved in nature?
Right.
And he says, but you know what? I've already made the cure. So just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And he, you know, we get to another one of these letters, narration from Phlox. He's in conflict with his captain. He can't believe he's gotten to this point, but he decided he had to be honest, even though for a moment he thought he might have to like hide that he'd made the cure.
Right. Phew, that was a really close call that we didn't see.
Yeah.
A lot
And I, you know, I could see them making that more of the focus of the episode, that he doesn't trust his captain. He hides.
Yeah.
It. But it's not the focus here, and I'm fine with that.
It's fine.
We get the line in the next scene.
We do get the line that I've been waiting
I wrote this all down because it's so fucking funny to me.
Please. Yeah, let's just settle in for some reenactment of this incredible line.
So Archer comes to Phlox with his decision. We know that Phlox has been wrestling with it. He needs to be inspired by his captain. And so Archer says, someday my people are going to come up with some sort of a doctrine. Something that tells us what we can and can't do out here. Should and shouldn't do. But until somebody tells me they've drafted that directive.
Oh my God.
I'm going
to pause. The pause for effect.
I'm going to have to remind myself every day that we didn't come out here to play God.
There ought to be a directive.
There ought to be a directive of some kind. Maybe a first one, a main one.
What if we did a sort of like the most important rule, the number one idea? What do we call it? Ooh, I'm so mad.
Now, I'm willing to.
It sounds like you came up with it, dog. It sounds like you came up with it.
The don't play God rule, which I'll be honest, as corny as this whole thing was, I kind of thought he stuck the landing, or the writer did. Because summing this up as
I'm gonna say,
don't play God rule.
Yeah, every day I'm going to wake up and say I don't want to play God, which is like awesome. Thank you, sir. Good.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Everything up to that was so fucking.
Yeah, like you could just go in there and be like, you could just replace that dialogue with just like, you know, we're going to have to codify this at some point, but I'm going to wake up every, in the meantime, I'm going to, and that's like as dumb and prequely, but as not so confoundingly dumb as rocks as that fucking line. Ooh, if they come up with some looking off into the distance and like pausing 5 seconds and being like,
I suppose it's direct here for any of our listeners who are actually not super into Star Trek, which is fair. There's a long running thing in every single series aside from this one called the Prime Directive, which is the don't play God rule. It's probably like it's in the first series a lot, but I feel like it comes up frankly the most in Next Generation because they're such a like,
yeah,
they love the moral quandary on that show. And that's what
I mean. It is the whole thing about
there to make.
Yeah. And it's the whole thing about the first contact thing is just like, don't talk to it. Don't talk to a pre-war species. Do not let them know that they are like in like the system.
The intergalactic community.
They're in a community of like, there's not like sentient species all over space.
And it was interesting. If you know that when this episode, the first thing they do when they're kind of talking about like, oh, these guys have met a couple other warp capable species like the Galar or whatever, but and the Ferengi. And also even the Vulcans have said they kind of have this rule sort of like, we generally don't talk to species that aren't warp capable. That is kind of a rule. But this is going farther and saying, don't give anything that could like change the progression of a species. And that's what they've decided this runs up against is like, we can give them basically palliative care, you know, don't make them suffer if we can help it. Don't give them anything outside of their technological capability. I mean, we get this in the last scene, like, okay, here you go. Here's the medicine. Here's the instructions to make more of it because you totally have that technology, but sorry, no warp drive.
Yeah. It's wild that these guys know the word for warp, by the way. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
They're like, hey, man, you guys got warp drive? And it's like, where'd you learn that word? Who taught you that?
The Ferengi. They wouldn't sell it to us, though.
I guess that's true.
And we get a final letter from Phlox where he takes a dig at the Vulcans. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I didn't want to be like the Vulcans and assume that humans couldn't make the decisions for themselves. Got him. And then he chats with Hoshi about his hard work, his hard week, because this is all in 1 week. And Phlox invites Cutler on a little date.
Yeah.
Sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams. See you later, Cutler, I guess.
Okay, so he says sweet dreams to his little menagerie.
He does. It's beautiful. I love the little menagerie. I wish we got more of them.
And I'm trying to remember how, I feel like there's a scene in a future episode where like a bat gets loose.
I believe that's correct. I believe there's a bat somewhere. It might have already happened.
I hope it doesn't, because I remember it being a really fun little B plot that he's just bats are escaped on the Enterprise. But I don't know what's going to compare to this episode the near term, but I guess we have the Ferengi one to look forward to.
The Ferengi one's coming soon. I'm very excited about whenever we get there. Yeah, what's coming up next week? I bet it's going to be bad. I bet it's bad, Clayton. I bet it's bad. I bet it's bad. What is it, number episode? We got 114 coming up. Let me just take a look. Oh, it's a boring one. Well, thought about killing myself. Great. Well, we'll see you then. Or I descend into the pit of hell. And Clayton descends into the pit of movies. We'll see you in a couple, in 2 weeks.
See ya. I'm Clayton.
And I'm Maddie. Tick tick for listening. And as always, let's go.
Let's go.